This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire primary made headlines this year, and not just for the results, but also for possible flaws in the voting process itself. Members of a conservative citizen activist group called Veritas went to about a dozen Granite State polling places and asked for ballots using names of voters who died recently. In most cases, they were given ballots, although it doesn't appear they actually voted. These events were filmed and put on the internet and, as you might expect, created a firestorm of reaction from those who blasted the group's tactics to New Hampshire lawmakers who said this proves the need for a state voter ID law. Last year, the House and Senate passed a bill requiring valid photo identification at the polls, but Governor Lynch vetoed it. Now a new Senate bill seems to have a better chance with a thumbs up from both the New Hampshire City and Town Clerks Association and the Secretary of State. Others, however, are still opposed, including the state's League of Women Voters, which calls voter ID laws attempts to infringe upon the fundamental right to cast a ballot. And this debate in New Hampshire is echoing nationally as more states in recent years have adopted some type of voter identification law. Today in The Exchange, voter ID laws. Let's hear from you. Should Granite Staters have to show a photo ID when they go to the polls or not? Is there a way to strike a middle ground on this issue between concerns over fraud and preserving fundamental rights? Call in The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also follow this conversation on Facebook. Our three guests are Joan Ashwell, election law specialist for the League of Women Voters of New Hampshire. And Joan, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Also with us, Wayne McDonald, chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party. And Wayne, welcome back.
Thank you.
And joining us from D.C., David Becker, director of election initiatives at the Pew Center on the States. And David, good to have you. Thanks for your time this morning.
Good morning.
Well, and all of you, let's hit this Veritas controversy right off the bat, because that, I think, has driven a lot of the renewed energy behind this issue. And Wayne, to you first, what do you think this incident shows, this taping of people posing as local voters and getting ballots? What does that tell us about our system?
Well, it definitely shows flaws in the system. And, you know, I want to emphasize right off the bat, all of us are concerned. No matter where you stand on this issue of voter ID and tightening up the voting procedure, all of us want to make sure that law-abiding citizens are given the chance to vote. Nobody wants to obstruct anyone's right to vote. But it's important that in the interests of the integrity of the election process, everybody has a fair shake. Everybody's vote counts, regardless of how they vote. And that the vote of law-abiding citizens isn't undermined by those who would abuse the process. You know, today you need a valid ID to get on a bus, to pick up a package, to enter a federal building, and for a host of other matters. It's simply a procedure in our society. And that's why we believe it's certainly voting is a very, very important activity, and certainly it should be extended to that as well.
Well, and I just wonder, you've been involved in state elections for a long time, Wayne. Were you surprised?
I was. I was actually at the Republican National Committee meeting. It was Wednesday morning. I was in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I get this email, dead people voting in New Hampshire. I see this on some blog or something. I said, what? And so, yes, I was surprised. But again, we've had concerns along other veins in terms of election procedure and people voting over the years. So I guess I shouldn't have been.
Well, and Joan, criticism of the tactics aside, because the Attorney General is looking into whether these folks violated the law, but that aside, what does it say to you, the fact that these people were given ballots?
Well, I think primarily what it says to me is if you pay somebody $50,000 to commit fraud, you can probably get them to commit fraud. Because these people did this, and this is what they do. Their business is to go around impersonating people and then produce very heavily edited videotapes to try to tell a story that they want to tell. Because they do that, it doesn't mean that anyone in New Hampshire is doing that. The truth is, the history in New Hampshire, we only have one example of somebody attempting to impersonate someone else. when you talk about photo ID, the only kind of voter fraud you are talking about is people impersonating other people. The only other example we have of that is a young man who said he was his father and wanted to vote. And that was sometime in the last 20 years. And he was caught without having a photo ID law. We have absolutely no evidence that anyone else is doing this or that this is a problem in New Hampshire. Even the sponsors of the bill have said that they don't know, they don't have any evidence that people are impersonating other people to get their ballot. And they don't even, you know, they have no suspicion that that's actually happening. The reason they give for having a photo ID law is that it's possible that it might happen in the future. That's one reason. And the other reason is that there are a lot of people in New Hampshire that they don't know. Well, my answer to that is get out more. You know, saying that you don't know that person and therefore I have to suspect that person of fraud just makes no sense. That's not the way we do laws.
And I've heard elections officials, you know, from the top on down say, hey, look, we have little to no fraud in New Hampshire. There's no evidence that fraud is remotely a problem in New Hampshire. I've heard others say that. But how do you feel, Joan, that, you know, some people say, here's the evidence right here on tape?
Well, I don't think this is evidence. I mean, first of all, they didn't cast a ballot, and neither did that other example. As far as I know, that young man didn't cast a ballot either. But there is no other evidence. And the important thing to remember here is this was a phony event. It was cooked up, carefully manipulated. And I think you'll find that some other ballot clerks did not, you know, give them the ballot. They questioned them. They were also caught, which is not shown on the tape, but they were caught. So they tried. They studied. They looked for people who had whose obituaries had just appeared. So they could be pretty sure that those people's names wouldn't have been removed. And then they went in and impersonated dead people. Well, if you're really trying to commit voter fraud, you are trying to influence an election. You would need massive amounts of people. You couldn't count on the people who died within the last few days. You would be going in and impersonating live people.
Well, David Becker, I want to bring you into this, too. Now, this is a state issue that we're talking about, but I'd love your thoughts on the message from this sting operation from Veritas.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. The debate going on in New Hampshire right now echoes the debate that's going on all over the country, and I think Wayne pointed out the sides of the debates particularly well. On the one hand, there's an ideological perspective that the integrity of the elections is paramount, and it's very, very important that we do everything we can to prevent ineligible voters from voting. On the other hand, there are those on the other ideological side of the spectrum who believe that access is much more important. The right to vote is so paramount that if we put up barriers that accidentally exclude those who would otherwise be eligible to vote from voting, that's something very, very wrong that we need to prevent. And so we see this debate playing out in so many states right now. Just in the last year, six states passed a photo ID law. There had only been two states, excuse me, previously, who had passed such a law. And there are voter ID laws being considered all around the country for precisely this reason. And it's understandable, of course. I think everybody on all sides of the issue want to see eligible voters be able to vote, but only eligible voters be able to vote. And so one of the things that election officials have a great deal of difficulty with is keeping up with people as they're moving, as they're dying. This is a situation where people had just died, and it's very, very difficult for election officials to be able to update their voter lists on such short notice. But, you know, this what's going on in New Hampshire is certainly reflective of what's going on in the rest of the country right now.
Well, and David, I want to ask you, we often hear that 30 states have some form of voter ID law. Now, there's a spectrum. Can you give us an idea of how wide a range there is in terms of how tough they are and what they require?
Yeah, that's a great point, Laura. There's all voter ID laws are not created equal. There are actually 31 states now that have some form of photo ID law. Eight have what I call no ID, no vote laws, where you must have an ID in order to vote. Georgia and Indiana had them in place prior to 2011, and then Kansas, Mississippi, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin passed them just this past year. Seven states, voters are asked to show a photo ID but are still allowed to vote if they can meet some other criteria in those states. And then there are 16 states where there are more expansive lists of ID that would be acceptable, including non-photo forms of ID, such as maybe a utility bill or a bank statement, which leaves 19 states plus the District of Columbia that have no ID requirements at all.
All right. We'll look in a little bit at some of the proposals here in New Hampshire. I want to invite our listeners to join us as well. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. As we look at voter ID bills across the country and the proposals here in the Granite State, what do you think? Should we have to show a photo ID when we go to the polls or not? Do you think there's a way to strike a middle ground on this issue between the concerns we've heard over fraud and preserving fundamental rights? Our number 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange at nhpr.org. And Wayne, we heard a description from David Becker about the different types of voter ID laws. Is the party, your Republican Party, getting behind any one particular type, from that very stringent no ID, no vote, to the 16 states that he said have more expansive lists of what's acceptable?
The party hasn't taken an official position except to say we definitely want to see things tightened up. And we're watching the bills in the Senate, Senator Carson's bill, Senator Prescott's bill. I'm looking at one of them right here, SB 318. It requires the Secretary of State pay for the cost of picture identification card upon presentation of a voucher to the Division of Motor Vehicles. It establishes that a claim of domicile for voting purposes be conclusive of residence for all other legal purposes, requires that voters present a photo identification or execute an identity verification affidavit, and then it also modifies forms and procedures for voter registration. That is certainly one bill that has a lot of merit and is along the lines we're looking at. But, again, we just stand in what we hope will become a bipartisan effort to tighten up our voting laws so that everybody's vote really does count, that if it's a legitimate vote.
All right. And, Joan, I'll get your thoughts after a short break. And we'll start taking your calls, too. Lots of people who want to jump in on this conversation. 1-800-892-6477 is our number here in the exchange. 1-800-892-NHPR. The email is exchange at nhpr.org. Your calls and emails coming right up.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. And from the Woodstock Inn Station and Brewery, proud to announce the expansion of its brewery to include on-site bottling and a new function room. Details at woodstockinnbrewery.com. And from Core Orthopedic Sports Medicine Team, specialist in joint preservation and the treatment of sports-related injuries, 778-7975, Core Orthopedics, the art of wellness. More on vetting voter identification laws on the exchange on NHPR at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, Pentagon budget cuts and U.S. defense strategy. And join us at 11 this morning for live coverage of Governor Lynch's State of the State address from the State House. New Hampshire weather for today, cloudy with any snow showers coming to an end. High temperatures from 30 north, ranging to around 40 in the south. Tonight, cloudy statewide with scattered snow showers north of the White Mountains. Lows tonight near 20 north, ranging to around 30 in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today we're discussing voter ID laws and the possibility that Granite Staters might have to show some form of ID at the polls the next time they vote. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send an email to exchange at nhpr.org. Our guests are David Becker, Director of Election Initiatives at the Pew Center on the States. He's been giving us the national picture on this issue. Also with us, Wayne McDonald, Chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party, and Joan Ashwell, Election Law Specialist for the League of Women Voters of New Hampshire. And Joan, I want to go to you before we go to all our calls and emails. You heard Wayne earlier on make the case that, look, you got to show an ID to board a plane, to make certain purchases at the bank, all sorts of functions in life these days where we have to show an ID. So why not voting?
because voting is an entirely different issue. When you go to the bank or buy a beer or cigarettes or whatever you are, you know, whatever you're using your ID for, you're making a commercial transaction. It's purely choice. You don't have to drink. You don't have to buy cigarettes. You don't have to do any of those things. They are commercial. They're not constitutionally guaranteed rights. The state can make whatever rules it wants for buying alcohol or cigarettes. Banks are private. They can make whatever rules they want. Voting, on the other hand, is a constitutionally protected right. The United States Constitution says you cannot interfere with the right of a citizen to vote. Basically, that's what it says. There's five amendments in the United States Constitution dealing with voting more than any other issue in the Constitution. It's because it's fundamental. Without voting, our entire form of government would not be the same. So it's not like, oh, you know, I want to buy a beer, I have to have an ID. No, it's an entirely different issue. It's a constitutionally protected issue, and it's available to everyone who's 18 years old or older or a citizen. Those are the restrictions on voting. You have to be 18 years old and a citizen. So they're very different issues. I wanted to quickly jump back to something Wayne said about we have to work to improve our election system. And the League absolutely agrees with this. And we've contacted the Secretary of State about making some changes that would certainly improve procedures. And it's been a very busy year. We haven't really followed up too much on this. But this is something that the League is always talking about, improving our procedures so that our elections are more secure. We just don't feel like threatening somebody's constitutional right is the way to go about it.
Well, and we'll talk in a couple minutes to a local election official more about making sure that the lists are in good order and so forth. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, let's start taking some calls. Ron's joining us from Manchester. Hi, Ron. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just want to say that the risk associated with people showing up at the polling place, trying to impersonate someone else, actually affecting an election is like the risk of an alien invasion from space. You know, there's, yes, I suppose it's possible, but honestly, any rational person would say the likelihood of that being enough to affect an election, you know, take hordes of people showing up, all impersonating other people, the far more likely route would be to use absentee ballot type voter fraud. So, basically, it seems like a huge amount of effort to affect something that is so, you know, unlikely in the extreme as to be a complete waste of time.
Well, Ron, thanks for calling in. I think to you first, David Becker, how much fraud is there in the election system? I mean, how big a problem is this?
Well, one of the things I think everyone on both sides of this issue recognizes, there's zero evidence that systemic fraud exists out there. It would be very difficult to compile, but I heard testimony of one of a major ID proponent in Congress about a month ago state that it was a fact that there was zero evidence of any kind of systemic fraud in the system. And of course, on the other hand, there is a legitimate concern of those to build a system that has as much integrity as it possibly can, while not excluding those eligible from voting. So it's one of those things that doesn't really resolve the debate. One of the issues that has often come up in some of the states, Georgia, for instance, Georgia requires photo ID for people who are voting in person, but does not require any kind of ID for people who are voting absentee or by mail. Along these lines, not all ID laws are created equal. So some have raised the point that, on the one hand, it may enhance the integrity or perceived integrity of the elections for those voting at the polls, but it does nothing for those voting by mail. And that's always something to keep in mind when we're looking at these laws, is whether there are some differences being applied to different voters who are using different circumstances.
Well, and Ron, thanks for the call. And to follow up with Ron's point, we got an email, and I'll put this to you, I think, Wayne McDonald, from Mark, who kind of makes Ron's point as well. He says, we can reduce the possibility of voter fraud by requiring people to present ID when voting. The question, Mark says, is whether that change would be worth it. He says a voter ID law would prevent many people from voting. For example, people who don't have a driver's license, can't make a trip out of town to get a non-driver ID. A voter ID law, he says, would also inconvenience tens of thousands of other people, all to prevent a handful of instances of voter fraud. Mark says it's a solution in search of a problem, kind of echoing Ron's point. What do you think, Wayne?
Well, I disagree. I have to say I respectfully disagree with that assessment. There are thousands, and I've been collecting some information in preparation for the show this morning. And, you know, there are thousands of allegations of suspicious or fraudulent voting behavior in every biennial election here in New Hampshire and I'm sure and around the country. Unfortunately, states that don't have a voter ID laws lack any sort of reliable paper trail, usually. And it's almost impossible to really investigate election fraud after the fact in most cases. And frankly, we've brought a number of cases in, over the years as a party, not since I've been chairman. But some of my predecessors have brought cases of election fraud to the attention of previous attorney generals, and they haven't even been followed up on. So
you're saying it's out there.
The empirical data, you know, if it's ignored, and do I have it in front of me right now? No, because it fades over time. But it's been an issue that I think needs to be addressed. And again, we've tried to.
Well, I want to bring another voice into our conversation, someone who's been working on local elections for a long time. Ed Becker is with us, moderator for the town of Andover. He's been supervising elections for 20 years. And Ed, thanks for being with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, from your hands-on experience, what do you make, Ed, of all this back and forth over the past year that we've seen in New Hampshire over whether we should or should not require photo ID at the polls?
Basically, the two sides aren't listening to each other. They're talking past each other. The people that think that we need to improve our elections, that voter fraud is rampant, they don't have evidence of it, but they think that we need to do something. The people that think that voting is a fundamental right, it's so basic that it can't be interfered with, they see voter ID laws as interfering as a scheme to go ahead and to reduce voter turnout. If we're of goodwill and think that everybody's going to go ahead and is coming to it from an honest position, there's room for compromise. There's ability to go ahead and to ask for voter ID or other forms of not just a picture but other forms of ID. When people come to my ballot clerks, I bet you my ballot clerks know 90% of the people that are coming to vote. I have a blind man that's 80 years old that everybody's known for 40 years in town, and I'm sure he doesn't have a driver's license with a picture ID, and to require him to go to Concord to get one just to vote doesn't make sense. But certainly you could say, gee, there are other ways to go ahead and to prove your identity other than getting a picture ID. We need to find a way to talk about the issue of gee, we'd like to make elections better, and two, we don't want to go ahead and interfere in any way with voters' rights.
Well, are there other ways that the registration process, Ed, could be improved before we even get to the polls?
One of the things that makes New Hampshire different from most of the other states in the country is that we don't have motor voter registration. In order to get on the checklist, you have to appear in person either to the town clerk or to the supervisors and prove your identity just to get on the checklist. And that's fundamentally different from people that mail in a registration and you don't know anything about them. So I don't know that we need to improve the way that we register voters. I don't know that needs improvement. I don't think so.
I got an email from Barbara who had a couple examples of how she thought, Ed, the system could be improved. One of them was using a signature, a sample signature of the voter. She says, having volunteered to help my town process absentee votes, she says a signature is pretty distinctive when comparing against a sample. She says, I believe this is required in New Jersey. So what about that, Ed, using a signature? You have to sign and then the clerk can say, okay, yeah, Laura Canoy's signature from her registration 10 years ago matches what she's given me today.
that certainly would work. I think that rather, as a practical matter, having every voter make a signature would slow things down quite a bit. So if you're going to say, gee, can you produce a picture, or if I know you, you know, you go and vote. And if there's any question and you can't produce a picture ID, please go, like, to the supervisor's table where new registrants go. And they can either go ahead and compare your signature to your original signature on your voter registration, or they could go ahead and you could say, oh, no, Bill Jones over there, he knows me, and they could sign an affidavit that they know him in person.
So lots of ways to prove your identity. You know, the other suggestion she had, Ed, was she said she was surprised that the person who looks up the name asks the voter if, quote, this address is yours, rather than asking the voter to give his address. She says, what about a request for address rather than giving the address and asking the voter to confirm? What do you think about that? Is that a way to improve things without having to add a photo ID component?
On initial thought, I think it would be. I hadn't considered it before, but I see no reason not to do that.
Well, final thoughts from you, Ed, on how we could improve this process, whether that means a photo ID or better checklists or better registration or whatever.
My thought is that we've got a solution in search of a problem, that we really don't need to do anything differently than what we're doing. In my 20 years, I haven't experienced any voter fraud. As your caller said, that it is likely to affect an election as an alien invasion. I really do think that we have a solution in search of a problem. But I will give people the credit that they want to improve the system. I just don't think that it needs it.
Okay, Ed, good to talk to you. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Ed Becker, moderator for the town of Andover. He's been supervising elections for 20 years. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. We're taking your thoughts, questions, comments on whether New Hampshire needs a voter ID law or not. And before we go to the phones, David Becker, I was real interested to hear Ed talk about how he feels everybody's talking past each other. There's no middle ground on this. How often are states, David, able to carve out some kind of acceptable middle ground on this issue?
I think Ed hit the nail right on the head. This has often been strictly along partisan lines, but not always strictly along partisan lines. And it's interesting how some states have approached this issue thoughtfully, trying to bridge the gap between the ideological extremes. I think Rhode Island is a really good example, where a Democratic-controlled legislature and an independent governor got together and passed an ID law in the past year that will be phased in over time, but also will allow, along the lines of what your emailer said, if the person doesn't have an ID, they'll be permitted to cast an affidavit or provisional ballot, and that ballot will then be counted so long as the signatures match. I know we've talked to some states where they have some form of ID along these lines and might have what might be termed a fail-safe for those without ID, where they can cast a provisional ballot about. They'll be segregated until it can be confirmed. And the number of ballots that are cast in that method are usually quite small and relatively unburdensome for the election officials to confirm the signature matches after the fact. Another way that states have approached these compromises is to find a variety of different IDs that could be used in this context, things that voters wouldn't have to go down to a government office or pay money to get, things like a utility bill or a bank statement, something along those lines that confirm that something with the voter's name and with their address on file is in their possession, so that they can go ahead and vote. I think those attempts to bridge the gap. I think we've also seen similar efforts by the Republican Secretary of State in the state of Ohio, John Husted, are really interesting and can perhaps form a compromise. And in particular, also as your emailer mentioned, doing something with the voter registration list. That's really one of the key points at which you can best protect the integrity of elections and enabling election officials to have better tools at their disposal where they can identify eligible voters, get them on the rolls in a convenient way with things like online registration. well before the election. That's another great tool that's been used in many states.
All right. And in a couple minutes, I want to ask both of my studio guests about bridging the gap here in the Granite State. But let's go to our callers again who've been waiting. And Mark is in Portsmouth. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Thanks for hanging on.
Hello, Laura.
Go ahead.
I would say that voter fraud doesn't matter until it does. And what I mean by that is that in any close election, a single vote can matter. I mean, there were six votes separating Santorum and Romney out in Iowa. Al Franken won by just a few votes. And I think if you were to ask Al Gore and George Bush what a single hanging chad means, i.e. a vote, I think they'd agree that, a single vote can matter.
What do you think? Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Mark. Finish up. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump in on you.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask Joan Flood, who is very concerned, Joan Ashwell, who's very concerned about these voter ID laws. What about that point, Joan? Voter fraud doesn't matter until it matters. And there are some close elections. So 10 fraudulent votes could make or break the result.
Well, they would if we thought that there were fraudulent votes. You know, we have more recounts in New Hampshire than any other state. We actually do it very well, very efficiently. I have, in all my time here, and I've worked on a lot of campaigns, have never heard anyone say, I want a recount because of voter impersonation fraud. This is a very closely divided state right now. The state changed quite a lot during the 90s when a lot of new people arrived. So elections tend to be close, and we have a lot of recounts. But they're not recounts because anyone is accusing anyone of voter fraud. It's just not a charge that's been made, not voter impersonation fraud. When you talk about voter ID, that's what you're talking about.
That's the type of fraud that you say people are worried about when they want
that,
an ID.
When you want an ID, it's the only kind of fraud that you could find from a photo ID. There's other kinds of election fraud that we could be talking about dealing with. But voter ID is so specific to people impersonating other people. The league, as I said, is concerned about election procedures and things that we do in here in New Hampshire. How can we improve things? But this is not the problem that we have in New Hampshire.
Wayne, I can see you want to jump in.
Yeah, talking about how every vote does count, we need to remember we're in New Hampshire. We had the closest U.S. Senate election in history. Some of us remember it. I think all of us remember it, at least. I think we're all old enough, 1974, Wyman and Durkin, two votes ultimately separated them. That's how the election results was certified, as Louis Wyman the winner. And Don Tibbetts, formerly of the Union, later wrote a book on the whole thing. But I also want to mention the fact that we talk about the constitutional right to vote, and certainly that's very true. But the Supreme Court has recognized that a photo ID does not unduly burden a citizen and in no way impedes on that right, especially if the ID is free, which is what the proposal is here in New Hampshire.
I want to ask both of you about a couple of proposals here in the Granite State. And coming up, we will take more of your calls. So stay with us at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org.
Today, Word of Mouth follows the State of the State address with a trip to our archives. We'll celebrate the 75th birthday of trailblazing composer Philip Glass and hear about how researchers, parents, and the media whipped up a controversy linking vaccinations and autism, despite all evidence to the contrary. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth picks up after the governor today on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Wilson Employment Networks, successfully impacting their clients' productivity by recruiting qualified talent for New Hampshire employers for over 12 years, online at wilsonemployment.com. And from Granite State Candy Shop at 13 Warren Street, Concord, makers of gourmet chocolates and fine confections for Valentine's Day since 1927, nhchocolates.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll hear highlights and discuss the issues raised in Governor Lynch's final State of the State address today, broadcast on NHPR at 11 this morning. You can email us your questions or comments about the speech before tomorrow's show at exchange@nhpr.org. And join us Wednesday morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking about voter ID laws and whether New Hampshire is about to join a long list of states requiring some form of ID at the polls. Let's hear from you. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go right back to the phones. And Jeffrey's waiting in Portsmouth. Hi, Jeffrey. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I think this is a nationally orchestrated diversionary tactic from the real problem, because the amount of, you know, voter ID fraud is minimal. But I just want to give some stories that, for example, my dad in Florida encountered a voting machine which would only vote for George Bush no matter how many times he tried. So they just moved into a different booth. So other people were voting in another booth that thought they were voting for, I think it was Al Gore. No, I forget which one it was, election it was. And then also down in Florida, there were some incidents where there were fire alarms at the voting booth, the voting stations, false fire alarms, where the whole stations were closed down for 2 hours right at lunchtime and people all went home. And my mom, also in Florida, accidentally voted for George Bush in the year 2000 because she misread the ballot.
So you're saying this is distracting us from real serious issues of voter
exactly
fraud.
That's what I'm saying. This is attempting to divert attention from the elephant by pointing at the flea.
Wow. Okay, what do you think? I think I'll turn to you first, David Becker.
Well, I think the caller raises a broader point, which is that we should pay attention to issues of election administration, how elections are administered, and I think Ed raised this point well as well, that how local election officials are able to administer an election given their often shrinking budgets and staff and resources that are often insufficient, particularly during the times right before an election. How do you make sure that ballots are easily readable by everyone, that the ballots can be counted well, that you don't create a circumstance where lines become unnecessarily long in the polling place because the procedure for checking in takes too long. We at Pew work on a lot of these election administration issues, and I couldn't agree more that attention should be paid to those so that the process both has integrity and is convenient for the voter.
And go ahead, John.
I just wanted to say, you know, when talking about fraud and the problems that some people think we have, it might be helpful for people in New Hampshire to remember how we actually do run our elections here. It was mentioned that New Hampshire, unlike every other state in the country, when you register to vote, you have to appear in person before an election official. You bring in documents that show that you are who you say you are. If you don't have a photo ID when you register to vote, the Secretary of State follows up to find out if you were indeed the person you said you were.
We also don't use electronic balloting here, as I understand,
We have counters, scanners, but we have paper ballots. Another issue I wanted to bring up. We have paper ballots that we run them through the scanner to count them, but we have them there. And when we do a recount, we count the paper ballots. So we count them twice in two different ways. And this is something a lot of other states, the issues with the other voting machines, don't have.
I wanted to just follow up on something else Jeffrey said and turn to you, Wayne McDonald, I think. Jeffrey said he believes this voter ID push is nationally orchestrated. Kate posted this comment on our Facebook page. She says, please ask your guests what the voter ID bill was modeled on and the influence of ALEC. That's the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is a group of conservative business and lawmakers who try to set national policy at the state house level. She sends a link, alexexposed.com. Kate says, this is one of Alex's pet topics. Do we want outside influences telling New Hampshire what to do? What about that, Wayne McDonald? Is this voter ID push here in New Hampshire being pushed by national conservative groups like ALEC?
No. I mean, certainly ALEC is a professional association. The National National Conference, National Council, I'm not sure the term, of state legislatures, NSCL. That's another professional association. I know many state legislators who go to their conferences, both groups' conferences every year. And it's an information exchange where legislators hear from different groups around the country, exchange ideas with their peers in various legislative bodies on various committees and so forth. And yes, they bring a lot of these ideas back to New Hampshire. It's no different than any other professional association. But ultimately, all of the legislators I know, and I know many, and I have known many over the years, they're concerned about a New Hampshire problem and a New Hampshire solution, whether it's voter ID or whether it's any other issue that comes before us. I'd also like to say that the talk about tightening up on registration procedures is certainly appropriate, but, you know, signatures change over time, so the signature today may be different than the one 5 years ago. The gentleman from Andover, it's a small community. Yes, everybody knows everybody in Andover. Everybody does not know everybody in Manchester or Nashua or Concord or Londonderry, where I live. So there's a number of things you have to consider that because it may not be as big a problem in one community, it certainly can be a bigger problem in another.
Well, and let's go to the idea that David Becker raised earlier, bridging the gap. There's a bill by State Senator Russell Prescott that tries to find that middle ground. It gives broader definition of what's acceptable photo ID, driver's license, federal ID, military ID, passport, college ID, any federal, state, county, municipal ID. What do you think, Joan Ashwell? Does that cover it? That's a pretty wide range of ID.
Well, it's all photo ID. And I should say that besides the League of Women Voters, the disability rights, several disability rights groups in New Hampshire oppose this piece of legislation, along with the AARP and other senior rights groups. Every time you one of the problems with photo ID legislation, and this is strictly photo ID, it's all photo ID, is that we know going in that there are many people, probably about 50,000 people in New Hampshire, who are eligible to vote, but they don't have photo ID.
50,000 people?
Yes.
They don't have some form of ID?
Yes. Well, not actually, it may be a little bit less because Senator Prescott's added student identification cards to his list when he amended it. But no, stop and think about this. Who has photo IDs? It's people who drive. Most people, very few people have a passport relatively. Very few people have military ID relatively. He has added student identification cards, so that does take care of a lot of people. But if you don't drive, basically you don't have an ID for voting purposes. And that would be the elderly more than anyone else. And second would be people who, for whatever reason, are disabled in some way.
Prescott's bill would also allow local elections officials to verify a person's ID if he or she doesn't have one, and would allow those who didn't pass that muster to fill out a voter affidavit. So a couple sort of outs there for
folks. Yes. Well, he added the local election official. The League is always a little bit concerned about that because if one of the motivations for having a photo ID is that people don't know people who move into town, that means anyone who is new to town will automatically have to go through other hoops in order to cast a ballot. Not to register to vote. We have a variety of IDs allowed for registering, but to cast a ballot. The other things are to fill out an affidavit. Now, my father was blind, so he didn't have a driver's license. And to go to the polls and be told he voted all of his life for 68 years before he died, to go to the polls and be told, well, no, you have to come out of line, you have to come over here, and you have to fill out a form and have it notarized, and then we're going to take your picture. And then once we've done that, you can get back and stand in line and go vote. That is the procedure that Senator Prescott has set out in his bill. Now, granted, it gives you something to do other than a photo ID, but the people without a photo ID are overwhelmingly the elderly and the disabled. And who are the people who are least able to get in line, then go somewhere else, do something else, fill out a form, get it notarized, have their picture taken, get back in line and vote? And why? Do we really think because you're elderly and you don't drive anymore, or because you're disabled and you never drove, that you are somehow much more likely to be committing voter fraud?
Could we talk about this a little bit more? Because this has come up nationally, I'm guessing, David Becker.
I'm just curious on how the 50,000 figure was arrived at.
That's from the Secretary of State.
I want to ask David Becker, actually, if this has come up. And then your thoughts, too, some concerns that Joan raises. But, David, the elderly and the disabled, these are groups of people who have protested these laws.
Yes, that's true. And in many states, they've protested the laws, and also students have protested the laws, depending upon what the law in the particular state required. For instance, in Indiana, you need to have a government-issued ID, which includes, for instance, Purdue University because it's a public university, but does not include Notre Dame University because it's a private university. So you get some odd disparities like that. And, of course, that those kinds of things can raise concerns. And I think that's why you see states like Rhode Island looking for a way to find the common ground and build up the integrity in their elections to satisfy those who are concerned about it, while at the same time providing for some method that those who may not have an ID are able to cast a ballot that will be counted after it's been properly vetted.
Yeah, could you jump in here, Wayne? It's not a pretty picture that Joan paints of this older person who's pulled out of line, has to go through all this rigmarole, put back in line. Can you address the concerns we've heard here in New Hampshire and nationally about elderly and disabled people? And I know you're questioning the 50,000,
well,
too.
Well, no, if that's what Bill Gardner says, I know how conscientious he is in terms of compiling data. And I was more curious than anything else. I wasn't trying to challenge
it
the
It does sound
itself.
Like a lot.
It does sound like a lot, no question. 50,000 of anything is a lot, whether it's people or money or anything else. Again, to get back to my original point, nobody is trying to make the election process harder or to disenfranchise anyone. But again, we've got to show respect for all of the law-abiding citizens, whether they're elderly, whether they're disabled. I assume these people want their vote to get the maximum impact as well, just as every citizen does. And in some cases, and that does sound like a lot, and I'm not sure if that procedure would necessarily be as difficult here in New Hampshire. We're pretty efficient in terms of how we do things here. But it's important for an integrity purpose, and I think procedure that Joan mentioned could be improved upon so that the elderly and disabled would not be put through quite the ringer that she describes.
Here's an interesting email that just came in. This is from Walter in Alstead. He says, another aspect of the need for voter ID is that there are residents of New Hampshire who I know of who own two homes, one in a rural area, another in a larger city. They register and vote at both locations, feeling that they have paid taxes at both and or are avid for some candidate. And we hear this not only with folks owning, for example, they live in Manchester and they have a nice home up on the lake, Joan, but also we hear about college students, which David mentioned. So go ahead.
Okay. Around 2004, most of the country went to computerized voter registration. We had actually already done that in New Hampshire. In some ways, we are pretty far ahead of a lot of other states in how we manage our elections. When anyone registers in this state or any other state, every single person who registers to vote anywhere in this country puts down a previous address. If they had been registered to vote anywhere else, they write down that address. And the previous address is notified by the new address of where they're voting. In New Hampshire, that's an automatically. We have one voter registration list. So if somebody is living in Dover and moves to Concord and registers to vote in Concord, the town clerk or the supervisor of the checklist in Concord notifies the town clerk or supervisor of the checklist in Portsmouth, or Dover, wherever I said, that this person is now registered here. Take them off your list.
So even if I don't personally call old town,
it
happens automatically between
the
towns?
It's the responsibility of the town election officials. In New Hampshire, we're all on the same voter registration list. In New England, there's an agreement of all the New England states that Bill Gardner had worked out that this would be done, and he's been working on, I don't know where it stands, trying to get this simply to be done nationally since everyone has a computerized voter list. This is not hard to do. So if somebody says they're registered in two places, their election officials may not be doing their job. And this is a concern that the League has, the training of our election officials.
And I know the Secretary of State's office is definitely looking into how these lists are compiled, whether we're following up, and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, just to wrap up with all of you. Yeah, David, go ahead.
Laura, I was just going to cut in because I think Joan raises a very important point that it is true that New Hampshire and all states are supposed to have a statewide voter registration database that checks against duplicates, and that's an inherent voter registration problem. But actually, it's very difficult for states to get information from voters, and they often don't on where they were previously registered to vote. And states don't really have a good way of sharing that information between states. And even when they do, it's very difficult to match a voter with one name in one state to a voter with a different address with the same name in another state. It's an area that we've identified as a real where there's really a need for improvement, and we're working with several states to try to correct that. But I think it does focus, Joan correctly focuses the problem on the integrity of the voter list, making sure that there is a way to keep up with voters as they move, as they die, to identify duplicates, et cetera.
So what Walter says he sees happening could happen, David.
It could happen if New Hampshire's voter registration database isn't working well within a state. A state is supposed to have a statewide voter registration database that identifies duplicates within the state. And there are states that we're working with attempting to try to find a way to better match data between states so they can identify when people move between the states.
Well, both of you here in studio, just to wrap up, what's going to happen next on this issue then, Wayne McDonald? There are bills in the Senate, bills in the House. Can you sort of tell us where it's going to go from here?
Some form I would expect, in talking to various legislators and knowing the legislators as I do on both sides, both the Senate and the House, that some form of voter ID bill will emerge from the legislature. We're hopeful that Governor Lynch will support this bill.
He vetoed the last one.
I know. He vetoes a lot of things. But we're hopeful that he will work with us this time in recognition that we do have a problem. Those nine people could have voted. They didn't. They got the ballots of dead people. We need to address this issue somehow, and we hope the governor will be on our side this time.
Well, I want to thank all of you very much for coming in. Real interesting stuff. Wayne McDonald, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Wayne McDonald, chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party, and Joan Ashwell, thank you very much as well. Joan Ashwell is with the League of Women Voters in New Hampshire. And David Becker, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Laura.
David Becker, he's with the Pew Center on the States. Coming up at 11, our coverage of Governor Lynch's State of the State address begins. We'll bring you analysis from here in studio and from the State House. So stay with us for live coverage of the governor's speech. And then the Exchange will also follow up with coverage of the speech tomorrow. So we hope you'll join us for that as well, Wednesday morning, live at 9. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Ryan Lassard. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.